Welcome to That Makes Total Sense, a podcast dedicated to exploring God's generosity and justice. I'm Alexis Busetti, a Christian aiming to ask good questions and encouraging you to do the same. Every one of us is wired by God to live out generosity and justice, but the how sometimes eludes us. That Makes Total Sense is a way for us to get together, posture ourselves as learners, and challenge one another to practice generosity and justice in a tangible way every day. Well, Sarah and I'm going to give a little, I'm going to tell on us from our pre-recording conversation. We are multiple cups of coffee in this morning because it is July. We have a lot of children between us and we are doing summer things. And so waking up on a Monday morning to record a podcast is a joy. And for me, at least, it is requiring multiple cups of coffee. Thanks for coming, Sarah.
Yeah. Oh, I'm happy to be here. I'm happy that we can drink our coffee together in solidarity.
In solidarity, because it is, when you said you went camping, I was really grateful. I hope I can say this now. I'm like, we're just chatting to hear that you had some sort of cover, like an RV, because we're in Houston and the idea of going camping in Texas in July, no one does this unless there is some sort of AC option. We're not just out in nature in July, unless we're in the water.
By choice. Yes. Oh, I know. No. And we live in the Midwest and I grew up camping. Like I grew up like tent camping situation. And I think it kind of left me a little scarred. And so yes, we go camping, but we generally rent an RV because this is the way I enjoy nature. I enjoy being and going places a little bit less expensively with all our children. But
yes,
I think probably won't be a tent camper again.
Yeah. Yeah. My husband is a geologist by, his profession. And he does this in part because he loves being outdoors, but he grew up in Colorado. So this is like, we even met someone this weekend who said, I don't think I've ever met anyone from Colorado, in Texas. And we're like, yeah, because they don't leave, like the Coloradans, they just stay because of course it's so beautiful anyway. And he grew up and was in college doing these things and being out in the field and all of this. And so then when we got together and got married and I'm like, I'm not into that. Like that's not, and so when we even car camping for him, he kind of affectionately calls wife camping, like, not generally for all wives, but for his wife, he's like, we can do like camping or we can do wife camping. I'm like, I want a shower, I want a shower. I'd prefer toilet paper would be great. These just amenities,
Electricity.
Thank you. Something. Something, yeah. Anyway, yeah. So we're summering right now. And so I just read your amazing book, which is what we're going to talk about today. We're not going to talk about camping, but it's called The Way of Belonging, Reimagining Who We Are and How We Relate. And Sarah, I told you when we first hopped on that I felt like I related to this book in almost too many ways, which I think would be the point as an author writing something like this. But it also, I think for me, I thought, okay, if you're writing this, so from your lens and your perspective, all of this is valid and it makes sense. And it's, and then I am just like a random reader and all it's doing all of these things for me. How many others are in the same boat where we're going, I don't know how to do this, or this is what I'm coming up against when I'm trying to do this. Or, it made me think of the memes that are out there of like making friends in your 30s. And for me now it's in my 40s, like this is hard. And I, I was inspired a few years ago. I had a class with someone and the class was over and I sent an email and I just said, at the time my girls were 11 and I said, I don't really know how to say this, but if I were 11, like my like my daughters, I would just say, do you want to be friends? You know, and thankfully, and doesn't always happen this way, I got the response from this woman who we are friends now, where she said, I have been thinking the same thing about you during this class. And I have been thinking of the same kind of, like, I just would love to be friends, you know? But A, that doesn't necessarily equal belonging in the way that you're talking about, but also, B, that feels awkward and hard, and it doesn't even necessarily address a lot of the internal stuff that you talk about in your book. So, long intro from me, a reader, but I think what I'd love to hear from you is you share bits and pieces of your own personal story, which is so valuable for the reader in this book. But I know that it wasn't just about you. So what made you think this is something that a broader audience could benefit from? Maybe what were you seeing, or what were you feeling, or what were you encountering in the various contexts that you inhabit that made you think, oh yeah, this is something that's not just something I'm working through, but something that other people could, you know, learn from?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'll just say too, like, I have a similar tendency with people that I feel like a connection with, of it's kind of like that, like, how soon is too soon to call or text afterward?
Yes.
Like, this to say, I really like you. And mm-hmm. I kind of like, can we do this again? Ben is always, my husband Ben is always like, it's too soon, Sarah. Like, you need to give it the whatever 3-day rule. And I'm like,
right,
2 days.
Right. Yeah.
What?
That's a long time. I know.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
So I really relate to that. You know, in addition to writing has always been how I process, how I make sense of the world, both the exterior world and my internal landscape. But the other piece of kind of my career or my occupations has always had, I've had the publishing part, and then I've always said the peopling part. And the peopling component, my job and my degrees have been in student development or higher ed. And so I, you know, when our kids were really little, we like lived on a college campus in a residence hall. Now, there was an apartment. We weren't like all crammed into a dorm room, but we were like really living alongside other people in this very like condensed and intense sort of way. And I pursued that career because community and connection and belonging has always been incredibly important to me, even though it mostly has been a question within me. But in those experiences of living alongside young adults in their 18s, 19s, 20s, I got a really firsthand look at our search for not only identity, but also belonging, because I think they're really, really closely tied to one another. And I saw the wrestling firsthand. And granted, that is a really intense like season of our lives in which those questions are really at the forefront, just developmentally, but also, you know, learning to live apart from our family of origins, perhaps for the first time, and to say, who am I apart from this, you know, what I've known. But what I also realized, so that first of all gave me a really up close glimpse into the wrestling that happens within all of us, and how if not confronted, if not tended to, how it also then can really spiral into other issues that prolonged loneliness and isolation can really manifest in the heart and soul of a person. And then outside of that, I've also been able to be a director of community for some creative spaces, both in person and online. And even there, and that was more like adults. It was people, you know, full-fledged adults, maybe a little bit more seasoned adults, I should say, in their 30s, 40s, 50s, who were kind of still navigating this, where do I fit and who am I? And I think those questions kind of keep cycling back around in different seasons. Even my mom, who's in her 60s now, is in a completely different season of life and has shared with me, like, here I am again, wondering, where do I fit? Who am I? What is my place now in my 60s? And so this question of belonging follows us. And what I once thought was something that was like just me, that I was like, why can't I pull it together? Why does everyone else seem to have this figured out? Slowly but surely, through my interactions with people, my job, but also then just interactions with readers, that one little email of somebody that's like, me too, you know, this is not like you've given words to something that's been stirring around inside of me. And so all of that combined said, you know, I'm gonna dig into this a bit deeper, because I think some of the things that we've all been doing, while not bad, aren't enough, maybe. Or we need some more. Like for me, these are good tools, but I also need something more substance, something more steady, something that I can become more grounded in. And just what I'd been pursuing wasn't that.
Yeah, you start the book with an anecdote where you met a woman, encountered a woman at a church event. And she's kind of like, okay, like I've done all the things. And, you know, I'm reminded of that. I think especially in church spaces, when we go in, I'm like, at least in my context, almost every congregation that I have visited, there's some sort of invitation if you want to connect with us. And it's almost always the word that's used. If you want to connect with us, if you want to connect with each other, if you want to get connected, fill out a connection card, you know, all of the things. It's always connection. And which is beautiful and wonderful and a great invitation. But I think that sometimes these kinds of things, I think, A, when it becomes like kind of common, where we're just kind of used to hearing this, I think for me, then I kind of start asking, you know, it's kind of like when you say a word over and over again and you're like, wait a minute, that sounds weird now, you know, where I'm like, eventually I start asking, like, what do we mean by that? Like, what is the expectation, kind of on both parties? What's the expectation of a guest when they would, you know, say, I will respond to this invitation to connect? What is the expectation on that person? But then what is the expectation on the congregation or on the leadership or on the community there that exists? And then also, you know, like, what do we mean by that? Because I could relate to this woman's words when, you know, she's kind of like, I've done the things and I'm still not getting it. You know, like I still kind of feel out there, you know, like, and that made me start thinking, oh, maybe this connection that we're advertising with good hearts, I think, which is very good intentions, is not quite the same as this belonging that you're digging into in the book. So, I mean, could you talk about that, just like that experience?
Yeah. You know, I think that, like you said, belonging, it's like has this more gravity to it than perhaps what we often experience on a particular Sunday morning or going and filling out a connection card and things like that. And I think for me, that question that the woman who approached me asked really, for her, like she gave words to something that was wrestling within me, that I'm doing the things, but it feels like it falls short. I feel like I'm still lacking something. I'm missing something, but I don't know how to get there. I don't even know what it is. And as I dug into those questions a bit more, what I found was that belonging, unlike just the act of connection or conversation or you know, relating to one another in these ways of, you know, introduction or these small talk and going further, that belonging has to do more with it's like three-legged. It's like a three-legged stool. And this is not an this is an analogy my friend Kimberly Finney has used before. And so this is borrowed language. But she talks about it being this chair. And so often we think of belonging only as like the one leg of the stool, which is the way that we interact with one another. The belonging that is offered to us, the belonging that is extended, you know, to us. But what I have come to realize is that the other two legs are equally as important and perhaps a bit sturdier than the other one, which is the ways that we relate both with God, embracing his love, understanding how he sees us as his beloved, understanding the largeness of his welcome with us. So there's the relating with God, and then there's the relating with ourselves, of understanding who we are, our inner workings, and learning to live more and more into the fuller versions of ourselves. Because I think that does take a lot of time. It's continual. We are always becoming. And so broadening my definition of belonging to include the ways that I relate with God and the internal work of understanding who I am and becoming the sort of person who imitates the love of God, who becomes a person of welcome in the world. Those are things, those two things are the things I actually have agency over. I can't control what people extend to me. I can't control the places that accept me or not for one reason or another. But what I do have agency over is how I relate with God, the ways that I pursue and follow Jesus, and doing then the internal work of understanding who I am. And it's hard. It's a lot of internal work, but of kind of reimagining or getting back to maybe a more original, good understanding of who I am, and letting that speak louder than the outside voices sometimes.
Okay, Sarah, I feel like I'm processing this again, like all over again just now. So thank you for using that language, the three-legged stool language. It was really helpful. I have two things to say on that. I say, one of my kids says, I have a statement and a question. So I'm like, I have a statement and a question. One of them is, I have shared this before on a couple of different podcast episodes, and now I feel comfortable sharing it. When I first encountered this language, it was a really big deal to me, and I held it very closely. We're talking about the internal work. So years and years ago, one of these like blow the roof off language that my therapist gave to me. And this is because I would say I have tended, especially in kind of my former life, and I still have some tendencies in this way now, to be a real rules follower. Rules make a lot of people feel safe. I'm one of them, you know, security, all that kind of stuff. But I think that also for me translated into this discussion that we're having now, because if I do the right things, then I'll belong in the right places. And that was this internal dialogue, you know, kind of monologue that I had, but it was influenced, I think, by my communities and kind of what was for me, you know, what I heard preached, what my peers were doing, you know, if I could be this kind of friend or wife or mom or congregant or do these things this way, then I kind of felt like maybe I was ensuring my place. And so all of those things were connected, but this still was like, for me, it was like, I just want to please. I want to please God. I want to please the people around me, you know. And my therapist said, she was asking me about my prayer life. And she said, what if? She's like, I'm not asking you to not pray these things that you're praying right now. So, you know, hear me there. She's like, but what if you added something? And I'm like, okay, you know, I'm ready because I'm a rules follower. I'm like, okay, give it to me, you know. And she's like, what if you just ask God for, like, if you could just feel his love more deeply, Like instead of saying, maybe not instead of, but in addition to saying, God, how can I please you today? Ask God, how can I feel your love today? How can I experience your love and experience your presence today? And that was like, it felt really stupid to me at the time. And I was kind of upset, like kind of mad almost, you know? But again, you know, I'm going to follow the directions. So I'm like, okay. But the more I started embracing that question, in my relationship with God, I mean, things really started to change for me. So when you're talking about that leg of the stool that feels sturdy, but that is also, for me, it was in internal work there. The other thing that, so there's my statement, here's my question. The other thing that I couldn't help but thinking as you were processing that out loud for me, thank you so much, was the way that you thread Nouwen's prodigal son throughout the book. And it felt providential for me because I just finished that. I was using it kind of like a devotional, not every day, but I was reading, you know, bits and pieces of the chapters and taking it really slowly. And I just finished it, I don't know, maybe a month or two before I started your book. And I'm like, oh no, I know this, you know, but some of the same things that you pull out, some of the themes from, yes, the prodigal son, the story in the gospels, but also how Nouwen relates to those characters in the story, just was spinning in my head as you were talking about those, that three-legged stool. So I'm wondering if you could talk a little bit about Nouwen's, his reflections on the prodigal son and how those have been impactful for you as you've started doing this work of going through this work of belonging in your own life.
Right. Well, you know, that book, The Return of the Prodigal Son, in my questioning about belonging became like this really crucial piece of the puzzle. That finally, when I read through that book, some questions that I was carrying became suddenly very clear. And so he really helped me find language and kind of a new framework for my approach for belonging. And his book isn't particularly specifically about belonging, but in diving further into both his experience with Rembrandt's painting of the Return of the Prodigal Son, and then with the passage in, oh my word, Luke 15, I want to say. I'm like suddenly questioning if it's, I think it's 15. He does two things. One, he kind of helps us to understand maybe some of our internal inclinations of the ways that we interact with God in first kind of in his descriptions of the two sons, who I think, you know, a lot of times we talk about the prodigal son. It's the story of the prodigal son. And I like want to push back on those little headings in the Bible just a little bit and say, I think it's about two lost sons, but they're just lost in different ways. So the younger son being, you know, probably a little bit more what we would term the prodigal, spent many years in Vegas, just kind of blowing away all his money, one wild day after another. And then there's the other son who had thrown himself, maybe a little bit more like you, into doing what was right and what was expected of him, and really wrapping up his worth in his work and doing the right thing, and being the loyal son, right? And it is really easy, I think, for most of us to identify with one son or another, and maybe both in certain seasons of our lives, to one degree or another. But what Nouwen does is kind of then at the end of that book, shift the question of saying, okay, I see myself, I can see my tendencies in how I relate with God in the sons. But what Jesus is trying to do in this passage, and what I'm finding, is that this story is not only about kind of understanding how we relate with God in the sons, but is an invitation to become like the Father, that what we have called spiritual formation, that this is the invitation, is to become more like the Father. And in becoming more like the Father, we become more ourselves, in the original version that God intended for us to be, in our specificity. And in becoming more like the Father, we then not only embrace the love of God that is within us, that we embrace our identity as, you know, bearers of God's likeness, but that we then extend that to others around it. I think Nouwen's phrase is we become home to one another. And so there's that thread of homecoming, of not only we get to be sons and daughters who come home to the Father who finds us, the Father who welcomes us, the Father who didn't ask where we've been or what we've been doing, but says, everything I have is yours, please come inside. And then the invitation becomes to extend that to other people in the midst of our very ordinary daily lives and say, how can I become the kind of person who extends that welcome in the world right where I am? And so I love that Nouwen's take on that particular story. I grew up, I was a church kid. I've been in church since I could breathe, basically. And so I've heard that story so many times, but that book in particular just really opened up something new for me, and especially in this larger question of belonging.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that. It did the same thing for me, and partially because I was like, Henry, I am not expecting you to invite us to be like the Father in that story. That was completely unexpected for me, because as you mentioned, for those of us who have grown up with the story, we're invited to relate to the sons. That's the kind of the easy, I won't say easy, but easy kind of in quotes, part of the story. But to make that connection between, you know, welcome, hospitality, belonging, connection, those things, and the Father in the story was disorienting for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
When I read it, it was
like,
it was
in
really
what ways?
Disorienting.
I'd be curious to know, like, what are some of the things that you were like, oh.
Well, I think because I, every time, and you know, it's like when you hear something enough, you know, and I think every time in that story, it's like, okay, but the Father is God, you know, like the Father is God. So that was like the main way in which it was disorienting, is like, can I enter into that space? But he wasn't asking, you know, if I sit back and think about it, I'm like, oh, that feels jarring. Like, oh, this kind of, you know, I think because it's like, oh, I don't want to have like some sort of Messiah complex or, you know, something like that, where I'm like the savior and I come in to do these things. But I think, oh, he's not really inviting us to do anything that Jesus hasn't already invited us to do, which is receive the love of the Father and give the love of the Father. And when I think about it that way, it feels much more comforting. But I think that to see the welcome of the Father in that story is supposed to be jarring. You know, right? How could he just not only embrace this son who has come back, but continually looking for him, pacing for him, wanting, throwing a party when he, you know, when he comes back? And then also for the other son to gently, you know, speak to his needs and to speak to his insecurities. It feels, you know, you feel that overwhelming love. And then it becomes in this way like, oh, am I, you know, for me, am I capable of that? Is this something that I can do? How do I get there? But again, I think, well, he's asking us to do what Jesus asks us to do, you know, which is to receive the love of God and love each other like we would love ourselves. And we would want those invitations that the Father gives. We would want that embrace, you know, and so to offer that to others. But yeah, so that was where it kind of got me.
Yeah.
It did remind me, though, when you said home, I was so grateful that you said that, because one of the quotes that you have in the book that really stood out to me was when you were talking with one of your boys about your work and about writing and belonging. And when he asked you what belonging was, I marked it so that I would have it here. The response you gave was, belonging is when we are safe, seen, and loved, where we can be ourselves. And that your child responded something to the effect of, oh, you mean like home? Which I just thought, I mean, I would feel like, okay, I'm done. I can't parent for the rest of the day, because that feels like the biggest win I would ever get in parenting, is to have a response like that. Like, feels so, just so like kind and sweet. But that sense of belonging, for those things to be true and for that to feel like home. And then I think about, how can we be like the father in that story and extend those things? I'll say real briefly, when my grandmother passed in 2019, my paternal grandmother and my grandfather had passed a few years before, and I had written something that was intended for a different purpose about their hospitality, the hospitality of my grandparents. They were, I think, to date, the most hospitable people I've ever met in real life. Yes, part of me is saying that because I'm their grandchild, but the number of people, it's like if I had a dollar for everyone who said that about my grandparents. But part of that, when I see this quote of yours, I think this is actually how they treated every person who came through the door. They welcomed, they saw them. You know, my grandmother, this, of course, she was of the age where, and she was a grandmother, so of course it's, hello, how are you? Have you eaten? You know, come sit down. You look tired. Can I help? Here's some water. Do you want a soda? You know, these things. This w their home was a place that just, you could, it felt safe. You know, it felt like this is a place where you could just be. One of the first times my husband visited, we used to have Sunday dinners there. There were lunches, but you know, in the South, you call them dinner. And we were dating, and he came and fell asleep on the couch, like all of the other men there, watching football on a Sunday afternoon. But that's safety. That's a feeling of safety. If you can walk into a stranger's home where you've been, you know, once or twice, I think it might have been his first visit, and fall asleep on the couch, like this, you know, this is safety. And I think all encompassing in that is that love, you know, that is just kind of, you know, like that prayer that I had, like to feel God's love, you know, to feel that presence. And where we can be ourselves. If you're concerned about what people are going to think of you or what you look like or whatever, you're probably not falling asleep on the couch or having seconds or, you know, those kinds of things. And I'm curious, as I even just start to think about the physical feelings of that, help us with, like, because I can name it, I can see it physically in my mind when I imagine my grandparents' house, but help us with, like, what is that like on the inside? You know, what is that internally? What is that spiritually? What is that as we are in our daily context? And it's something that, this may not be related, I don't want to jump the gun, but you do talk about like lack and longing. And I think this is the longing, you know, this is something that we're longing for. So yeah, maybe talk about that internally. What are we looking for? And maybe how do we recognize it when we're in some of these places?
Yeah. You know, this is really fresh on my mind, because we just got home at like 12:30 in the morning after camping, and that sense of pulling up to our house. And as soon as we got there, and the boys, like, I could sense there was just this like communal exhale that happened, that we were home, you know? And I want to recognize too, like, The place where we grew up or our families of origin often come with a lot of complexity. So the idea of home may not initially elicit feelings of safety and warmth and welcome for all of us. So maybe we think about home less in terms of where we have lived or our families of origin, but maybe the spaces or the places where we have felt like we can exhale, where we walk through the door and I don't feel like I have to be anything in particular other than there and present. And the spaces where I just don't feel like I have to try so hard. I think back to that like older brother in that story of the parable of the prodigal son, you know, that older brother is just trying so hard to work his worth when all along the father's been right there. All along, home has been right there. You know, in the story, the father says, "Everything I have is yours. It's always been here. The abundance has always been here." And I think of the spaces and places where I feel like I can just exhale and be who I am, and there's not this internal monologue happening of like, ooh, how will this be received if I say this? Or how will this be received if I stay silent? Or because I know the opposite, the places where like my shoulders get tense or I'm kind of a little bit on edge of like, ooh, my boys are gonna break something here, you know, because they always do. And so I feel the difference in my body, you know, of like the way that my body responds to that sense of welcome. And then internally, like in my spirit, I don't feel this sense of needing to, like, I can just be human. I don't need to censor myself. I don't need to present this polished version of Sarah, where I am, because that for me, there is a lot of that internal wrestling, especially within church spaces. I'll just be really honest of feeling like I need to present a particular image of myself or to hide little parts of myself because I don't know how they'll be received. And so that's not home all the time is when I feel that. Now, I will say that sometimes, you know, you talked about that lack versus longing. In my personality, I'm kind of pre-wired toward lack in that I can, before even entering a room, I can easily tell myself stories that I'm already out of place. And so I feel myself caving inward before I have even given the room a chance. And in those situations, it's less about the room. It's more of what is happening within me. Am I walking into a space ready to be that person of welcome, to not necessarily be the answer to everyone's loneliness, but am I being attentive to the people, to what is in the room? Am I looking outward? Are my energies focused outward versus all caving in on myself? And I'm so much, and then I walk in with this like armor. I walk in with walls already built up, already assuming that I don't belong here. And so the more that I can recognize before I even walk into a space of, okay, I am feeling already out of place. I'm feeling insecure. I'm ha carrying these questions of belonging again. But learning to recognize that doesn't mean there's something deficient in me. It's that I long for connection. I long for this communal image of God thing that was put inside of me from the very beginning. And that is a very good thing. And if I can let that longing then direct my energies outward, direct my attention outward, it really changes the way that I enter a space. And I feel then more attuned to the love that is already with me, the God who is already with me, who says, you don't have to try so hard. Just be yourself. It's okay. And granted, that's not always received. I can be a lot sometimes. But having already carried that with me into the room means I'm also going to walk back out with it. And I become less battered by the waves of whatever particular room I am in when I walk in with that internal sense of welcome before I even start a conversation. And so, and granted, this is not a one and done thing. This is like before I enter most spaces all the time.
Yeah. I feel that. There's so much of that I can relate to. One of the things I thought of when you were talking about the wired heart, this isn't in my notes, so I hope I'm remembering it correctly, but you talk about the version of the creation story where Adam is naming the animals and God tells Adam it's not good for him to be alone. And this isn't, and you don't talk about it in the context of marriage, and I'm not talking about it in the context of marriage either, but it's in this, but you name this like, okay, like let's orient ourselves here. Adam is walking with God like every day. So not lacking in love, right? He's not like, you know, but God still sees and designs that it's good for people to be together. Adam has God. Adam has all of these other things and creatures inside of creation, animals. I mean, my dog is laying over here with me right now. I love her. She's a companion for me. But it is good for people to be with people. Can you talk about, because I've heard this a lot of times, but when the way that you phrased it in the book, I was like, oh yeah, you talk about that.
Yeah. You know, that realization was really important for me because, especially maybe in the season of life, because I look at that story of Adam walking with God in this, like, it, to me sounds like a vacation. The idea of having this like solitary time with God sounds lovely, and I want that. But in that context of the man, the Adam walking with God, and God saying, "This isn't good. Like, it's not quite. We're not quite there yet." Is really telling, and it's so interesting because on one hand, you know, I have a podcast, and the tagline is for those of us who agree it's not good to be alone, but secretly wish. Or secretly wonder, like, if it would be easier.
Yes.
And I think that so often in our relating to one another, that's where we come face to face with so much of what is broken or wounded within ourselves. The things that, I guess it's both and, both the broken and the woundedness, but also helps us see, if we're looking, a more expanded version of who God is too. Because we have one set of eyes. Those are typically, we get two eyes for most of us of what we're given. And we can only see through those two eyes. And in walking with other people, of learning to lean in and understand the way that they experience the world, to understand their stories, it helps us see a God that is much larger than the version that we see of him. And that expands us. That expands, we can let it expand us. and both our understanding of God, but also I think in growing compassion toward one another, compassion toward ourselves in our humanity, and the fact that, oh, we're all struggling with these things, or we all have these shared types of experiences, grief, joy, loss, love, all of these things. And we need that part that is the image of God in us. I think it was Chuck DeGroat said that we need that empathetic witness. And we have that in God, but we also need it from each other. And I love that phrase that we need people to witness our humanity. We need people to witness who we are, even in the darkest depths of who we are, and to stay and to stick around and to say, I'm here. I'm with you. I don't think it's in the book, or if I did, I didn't go much into it, but I've thought a lot since writing the book about the end of that story of the prodigal son and how we don't really know what happens, but I see the way that once again, the father invites the older son to come back inside, come be reconciled to your brother, come embrace your brother, come be with us. And we don't know whether or not he does, but the father wasn't just wanting the son to be reconciled to himself, but also then to the brother, to the party people who are in the house, always wanting him to come be with others. And I think that's so telling. You know, I mean, it just, again and again, God says, let me embrace you with the fullness of my love, and also love one another. Rinse and repeat over and over again throughout scripture, you know?
Yeah, it's when you said that, my imagination went towards, you know, the narrative that I'll kind of make up about the older son at home was that things were kind of, it was usually business as usual. I mean, you know, it was, they're doing the things that the estate requires that they do. They're raising animals, or they're farming, or they have a trade, or whatever it is. And it, you know, in my imaginative narrative, it's kind of rote, you know, but to, as you say, like, if he chooses, he can see in his father the way that he embraces and lives out love when things are not rote, routine, when things go wrong, when there's hurt, when, you know, he can see celebration in a different kind of way. He could see, yeah, empathy and compassion and those things that existed and in his father, but maybe they didn't come out in the same ways when it was this routine, you know, parts of the relationship that he had with him. But if he embraces and expands, as you say, his vision, he has an opportunity to expand his vision of his father by observing and participating. I think that's, you know, kind of what you're getting at, and participating in that interaction with his brother. And then he can see, yeah, facets of his dad that were there but didn't show up in the same ways, you know, in those parts of his relationship. And I hadn't really thought about that before. I do think, you know, I see that we get that when I was a theology student, that was one of the things that I enjoyed the most, was reading different theological perspectives, liberation theology, womanist theology, you know, Asian American theology, so that we, you know, like how do these groups, these theologians, experience God in ways that I can't, because I'm not an Asian American man. And so there are certain ways that I don't see God in that way. But if I cozy up to my neighbor and listen to their stories of how they experience God, then I get, as you're saying, the opportunity to expand my vision of God as well. So yeah, that's really good to see that in that story.
And maybe even that word expand, I think it too, of just remaining tender, of remaining pliable, of remaining, of allowing myself not to get so boxed in my theology or my practice or my even routines that I don't allow for myself to be human, allow for myself to be wrong, allow for myself to say, I don't know. And so sometimes that expansiveness, you know, so that word might make people feel a little uncomfortable because it's like, oh, well, then does that mean anything goes? But I think of it sometimes a little bit more in terms of a quality, of a flexibility, of a tenderness, of humility, of being people who are grounded but still growing, still recognizing like I'm still in process here, and my way is not necessarily the only way.
One last question as we start to close out, and that is, what have you heard? What's been the response from readers? I'm asking that, and the kind of the heart inside that question is, I want to say, you know, who is this for, or what can, you know, what can people take away, or something like that. But we're all so different. Yes, there's universality. This is obviously why this is applicable. But so I'm asking, what have you heard from folks who have read the book? What has been some of their responses, some of the ways that they're processing this writing? And I'm asking that kind of in the hopes of people who are listening and they're thinking, okay, yeah, I can relate to this. Like, what might they get if they picked up the book and decided, okay, yeah, I really want to kind of dive into this because this is so far been meaningful to my experience.
Yeah. Two things come to mind. For those who pick up who have reached out to me, I'm hoping there's a lot more who are reading and just are quiet. But for those who have reached out, they're finding language or a sense of, oh, it's not just me. Just in a lot of my own personal story. That I weave throughout, especially, and finding language for that loneliness I think that most of us share, especially over the last several years, due to so many reasons, that increase of loneliness has been on the rise. And I would guess most of us haven't been untouched at one time or another, if not now. And so there's been that sense of this is a shared experience, that it's not just me. And I think that that's allowed readers to have that moment of exhale of being like, okay, whew, like this is a shared burden. It's not mine alone. And I don't have to necessarily hide it quite so much. And then the other piece of it is that I'm hearing people wanting to take it slowly. Because a lot of, you know, the first half of the book is very like setting the framework for the different way to look at belonging. Like let's reimagine this. Let's reimagine how we have approached this belonging. Let's have a different framework. And then the second half of the book walks through a posture and a practice, like five different postures and practices. I think it's five. That allow us to kind of shift from, let's say, from lack to longing of this is what this could look like. And then there's a chapter that would follow that is a practice. This is how we could begin to walk this. This is how we could begin to walk this way of belonging. Because I think one thing I want to be sure to say is that the way of belonging is not a place of arrival. What we're talking about is a way of being. It is a way of being in the world as a person of welcome and continually coming back to that perspective of belonging, sometimes over and over again, even through the course of a day, and remembering who we are and remembering the way that God sees us and the way that God invites us to see other people. And so what I'm hearing is readers wanting to kind of take that slowly, because there is internal work that has to happen along the way. And that's good to take it slow and give it time. And yeah, so I think that it might be a book. Then the third thing I'm kind of hearing is that people will read it through the first time and then be like, I want to read this with someone. So I really hope, my desire, and I think it's starting to happen, is that this is a book that is kind of just starting a conversation. This is not the end all be all on the topic of belonging, but I do hope that it invites people to have some language, to have a richer, deeper, substantial conversation about how we live it out in our daily lives, you know, going to Trader Joe's or to Walmart or wherever we go, the school pickup line, which is the bane of my existence.
Thank you.
And I think it just gives us these little incremental ways to begin to see our lives a little differently and our way of being a little differently. And so take it slow, take it with a friend, small group, what book club, but that's what I'm hearing back. And it just really, I mean, you know, you write a thing and then you like send it into the world and you say, go grow legs, go do your thing. And so it's just been interesting to hear what's coming back. It's like to hear the reports of this book's adventure that's happening out there has been really cool.
Oh, thank you so much, Sarah. I am one of those people who, when you said take it slow, I thought that's what I would do if I did it again, was take it slow. I was trying to get it read before we talked, which I did, but reading it for my own personal, you know, I would take it slow, kind of like the Nouwen book was for me, just a little bit at a time. So that's really good. Again, thank you so much, Sarah, for being with me. Your newest book is The Way of Belonging, Reimagining Who We Are and How We Relate. And I'll put how you can connect with Sarah on the show notes, as well as a way to grab a copy of the book and the other resources that we mentioned. Thanks so much for coming on.
It's been such a good time. Thank you for the invitation. I'm grateful.
The links for all the resources mentioned in today's episode can be found in the show notes. Music and podcast production by Seth Busetti. Be sure to give us a review on iTunes and subscribe at your favorite podcast listening app. You can also visit us at thatmakestotalsense.com.